Welcome to Navigating Life with Neurodiversity, a podcast about identity, healing, and honest conversations for those who feel deeply, think differently, and live uniquely. My name is Matt, and I'm glad you're here. People like to talk about autism like it's a riddle, a puzzle, something to crack, decode, or unlock. They use words like mystery and disorder, as though autistic minds are locked vaults instead of open systems, as though the way we think is a malfunction rather than a variation. I've heard the metaphors, I've lived through them. Autism is a spectrum, it's a label, it's overdiagnosed, it's underdiagnosed. Autism is a trend, autism is a tragedy, autism is a gift. Everybody seems to have an opinion, but not everybody has experience. So let's change that. My name's Matt. I'm a technician, student paramedic, writer, and someone who is autistic. Not in quotation marks, not in theory, not as a footnote. Autistic. Full stop. This is not just something I study or witness, it's something I live. Every hour, every day, in my senses, in my thoughts, and in my reactions, in the quiet spaces between conversations. So today's episode is for anyone who's ever wondered what autism really is. Behind the stereotypes, the science headlines, overly chirpy awareness campaigns. But it's also for people like me, the ones who've always known we were different, even before we had a name for it. Today I'm going to strip away the buzzwords and get to the truth, not just of what autism is, but what it feels like, what it costs, what it gives, and how it shapes our relationship with the world. Autism isn't a mystery to those of us who live with it. It's not a puzzle to be solved. Not an enemy to be pitied, it's not a monolith. It's a way of experiencing life that is intense, nuanced, often painful, often beautiful, and always real. So let's start at the beginning. Let's start by untangling the language. The term autism spectrum disorder, or ASD, is what you'll find in clinical manuals like the DSM-5 and the ICD-11. It's a neurodevelopmental condition that affects how people process information, interact socially, regulate their behavior, and interpret sensory input. But that definition, like many in medicine, is built from the outside in. It's about what neurotypical professionals observe, not what autistic people experience. And whilst I respect clinical language for the role it plays in access and diagnosis, I also think it's time that we had more human definition. So here's mine. Autism is a way of perceiving and interacting with the world that prioritizes detail over generalization, pattern over assumption, intensity over moderation, and truth over social conveniences. It is not a disorder of empathy. It is not a deficit in logic. It is not an absence of imagination. Autism is not the absence of anything, rather it's the presence of different neurological architecture. Yes, autism can bring challenges, yes it can be disabling, but it is not inherently broken. The difficulty doesn't live inside us alone, it lives in the gap between how we experience the world and how the world expects us to behave. And that problem with how society talked about the spectrum. It's often seen as a straight line, low functioning to high functioning, but the reality is much more complex. The spectrum isn't a gradient of severity, it's a constellation of traits. Sensory sensitivity, social processing differences, emotional intensity, executive function variability, and special interests that show up differently in each autistic individual. You don't grow out of it, you grow into it. Into an awareness of how to navigate your own needs, your triggers, your capacities, into an understanding of what the world sees in you and what it misses. Let's hit pause for a second and tackle a few persistent myths. Myths like, well, you can't be autistic because you're so articulate. Articulation isn't a disqualifier. In fact, many autistic people are highly verbal, especially those who have adapted to survive in neurotypical spaces by overdeveloping language as a coping mechanism. What you're seeing isn't the absence of autism, you're seeing the cost of masking it. Many of my friends and past relationships will often bemoan the fact that I have a tendency to over-explain. In my mind, this over-explanation removes doubt, creates understanding, and bridges the gap where my points can't be misconstrued. In reality, I've been told it's quite annoying and often used as a negative by the people I'm trying to explain it to. The next one, but you make eye contact. Well, so do actors, so do politicians. Eye contact isn't a universal indicator of emotional presence. For some autistic people, it can be painful or overwhelming. For others, it's performative. It's not about whether we can do it, it's about what it costs us to sustain it. Myths like, well, aren't we all a little autistic? No. Just like we're not all a little diabetic because we like sweets. Traits like introversion, sensitivity, or routine preference do not equate to autism. The statement trivializes the real lifelong challenges that autistic people face. You don't look autistic. That's because autism doesn't have a look. It's layers. It's internal as much as external. It can be loud or quiet, visible or hidden, structured or chaotic. Most of all, it's shaped by context, including trauma, culture, race, gender, and class. And for people like me, those socialized as boys, taught to man up, raised to prioritize composure over confusion, our autism was invisible, only because we became experts at pretending we were okay. I didn't get formally recognized as autistic in childhood, like many late diagnosed people. I flew under the radar because I functioned. I did okay in school. I was the kid who finished tests in half the time and spent most of the time acting like the class clown. I had friends, sort of. I mimicked them. I copied behaviors, cataloged social rules like data points. But nobody ever really noticed that I was exhausted by it. My friends' parents would often praise me for being the mature one or for being focused, but nobody ever realized they were just symptoms of masking. And that's the thing about undiagnosed autism. It doesn't show up as obvious distress. It shows up as chronic disconnection. It shows up as always feeling one step out of sync, like everybody else got a manual for human behavior that I just missed out on. You're constantly translating, adapting, and suppressing. You become a master of code, switching between who you are and who you're expected to be. And the cost of that is an internal collapse. It's anxiety, burnout, depression, identity confusion, a haunting sense that you are wrong, but you don't know why. When I finally began to explore the idea that I might be autistic, it wasn't because I had a checklist of symptoms, it's because I was tired of hiding and I needed a story that made sense of the why. Autism isn't just a way of thinking, it's a way of being. It lives in the nervous system, in how we absorb light, sound, movement, touch, emotion, even time. It's not just something we are, it's something we feel physically, constantly. If you're autistic, your relationship to the world isn't just philosophical, it's sensory. And for many of us, the body becomes a battleground long before we understand why. Let me paint you a picture. Imagine walking into a crowded A&E resus room. For most people, it's a blur of urgency, fast footsteps, loud voices, vital signs, decision-making. There's adrenaline, of course, but also filters. Neurotypical brains filter for relevance. They tune out the fluorescent lighting, the buzz, the overlapping radio chatter, the colleague tapping their pen. My brain doesn't filter, it collects. I hear every voice in the room, all at once. I hear the beeping of the monitor, but also the pitch modulation in a colleague's tone that tells me they're suppressing panic. I feel the cold of the floor tiles. I can smell antiseptic and sweat and something metallic beneath it. The light isn't just bright, it's sharp, like it's pressing into my skull. I can feel the weight of my uniform against my skin in places that people don't register. There isn't drama, it's data, and my brain logs all of it continuously. Sensory processing differences are core to autism, and they show up in endless variations. Some of us are hypersensitive. Every sound, texture, or smell feels amplified. Others are hyposensitive. We may crave stimulation, movement, deep pressure, or forget we're hungry until we collapse. Many of us are both, depending on the day, the environment, or our energy. When people think of sensory issues, they imagine screaming at loud noises. But the reality is often subtler. It's the itchy jumper that ruins your entire morning. The background hum in a room that no one else notices but you can't ignore. The fluorescent lighting that makes reading impossible. The mild perfume that feels like you're being waterboarded. And when the sensory input becomes too much, when the bucket overflows, we often melt down or shut down. Not because we're childish, not because we're overreacting, but because our nervous system has just reached capacity. In a meltdown, the body takes over. It's volcanic, explosive, often external. For me, they're rare, but when they happen, I lose words, I pace, I hyperventilate, I need containment. In a shutdown, it's the opposite. I go quiet, still, locked. I can hear what's happening, but I don't speak, I don't move. It's like someone pulled the plug and I'm running on emergency power. It looks calm, but it feels like suffocation. I've had shutdowns at work and no one's noticed. I was still standing, still making decisions, still using my crisis mode voice, but inside I was frozen, detached, running purely on instinct. I'd finish the job and then sit in the ambulance afterwards, staring at my gloves or my hands, unsure whether I should take my gloves off, wash my hands, touch my face, who knows. But this is the part that people don't understand. Autistic people don't always look overwhelmed. Sometimes we just are, quietly, invisibly, entirely. And that's where it gets even more complex. Masking. Masking is the learned behavior of suppressing autistic traits to pass as neurotypical. It's smiling when you want to stim. It's forcing eye contact. It's scripting small talk. It's studying the room like an anthropologist just to avoid offending someone with your tone or timing. It's being so good at pretending that people forget you're pretending at all. Masking is exhausting. It's not just social, it's sensorial. You're not just performing normal, you're absorbing discomfort while pretending you're not uncomfortable. I've masked entire 12-hour shifts on nothing but caffeine and panic. I've responded to major incidents, led traumatic calls, delivered bad news to families, all while pretending that I wasn't spiraling inside. And people have praised it, called it professionalism, called it grace under pressure. But they don't see the crash afterwards. The hours I spend in silence, pacing in the dark, my brain replaying every word, every tone, every expression, trying to decode what I'd missed, what I'd misread, what I'd said wrong. People haven't seen the burn marks on my back from scalding showers taken to ground my nervous system. They don't see the 2 or 3 days in a row spent in bed. They don't see the food I didn't eat because I couldn't bear the texture. They didn't see me crying in silence behind the wheel of the car because there was no words left. This is autistic burnout, and it's real. Burnout is not just being tired. It's a state of profound physical, emotional, and neurological exhaustion caused by prolonged masking, overstimulation, and unrelenting pressure to perform. For autistic people, it often comes with regression, losing previously learned skills, struggling with speech, sensory tolerance, or emotional regulation. It can last weeks, months, sometimes years. And it often gets misdiagnosed as depression, anxiety, or PTSD, all of which can coexist, but don't capture the root. The root is this. I wasn't made to live in constant performance mode. I wasn't meant to translate myself 24/7. I wasn't wired for shallow connection and surface-level communication. And when I do those things, to survive, to belong, to stay employed, I fracture. I've lost count of the amount of times I've been told, "But you're doing so well," as though functioning is the same as thriving, as though a clean uniform and a completed checklist are evidence that I'm okay. They're not. Sometimes they're the mask. Sometimes they're the only thing holding me together, and sometimes they're the reason I fall apart. At this midpoint, I hope it's become very clear that I put an awful lot of time and research into some of these posts. If you or someone you may know may benefit from the insights shared within this episode, please like, subscribe, share it around. So what helps? Understanding, rest, space, and permission. Permission to stim, to say no, to leave early, to not have to explain. I have a bag that I carry to work with me, and inside it there's noise-cancelling earphones, soft gloves, a small scent diffuser, there's a fidget cube. Some people think it's overkill, but for me it's survival gear. I plan my food for the week based on texture rather than taste. I plan nothing days into my calendar, like people schedule meetings. I wear soft socks without a seam around my toes in my boots to avoid that sensory friction. I rehearse conversations, and if you open my notes app in the phone, it's full of long-form planned out messages. Not because I'm fake, but because it keeps me from collapsing under the weight of improvisation. Autism isn't something I can turn off, but I've learned how to turn down the volume of the world just enough so that I can hear myself again. Getting diagnosed with autism late in life is like being handed a map of the city you've lived in for decades, but suddenly all the back streets, detours, and roadblocks finally make sense. You don't get a new brain, but you get a new language. You get names for things that used to feel like personal failures, and you realise the reason you couldn't maintain friendships wasn't because you were cold, but because social reciprocity felt like a game where everyone else is playing with invisible rules. You realise the reason you melted down in your teens wasn't because you were dramatic, but because your nervous system had been in overdrive for years. You realise the way you always felt like you were too much or too weird wasn't because you were broken, but because the world wasn't designed to hold minds like yours. You feel grief, not because you're autistic, but because of what you lost by not knowing. The diagnostic criteria for autism are still largely based on outdated research, focused predominantly on white boys. And that means that autistic women, girls, non-binary people, and even emotionally attuned boys often go unnoticed. Especially those who present with internalizing traits like anxiety, passivity, or perfectionism. If you're socialized to be agreeable, quiet, nurturing, or emotionally intuitive, your autism is much more likely to be misread as sensitive. If you're skilled at mimicking others or masking your confusion, you're praised for your adaptability, not supported in your difference. If you're high achieving, you're rewarded. If you're compliant, you're invisible. I wasn't disruptive, I was overstimulated. I wasn't defiant, I was dissociating. And I wasn't lacking in empathy, I was drowning in it. But I have had no idea how to express it in a way that people understood. I remember being praised for being self-sufficient or unflappable. Some people get praised for being low maintenance. Plenty of people that would argue I'm high maintenance. But nobody ever asked me what it cost to be that way. No one notices the shutdowns that happened when I get home. No one saw the overstimulation behind the smile. And when I started to question whether I might be autistic, I often doubted it myself because I didn't fit the mold as seen in documentaries or textbooks. I'm verbal. I have a job. I can make people laugh. I have trauma, but who doesn't? Cultural image of autism didn't leave space for someone like me. Someone both competent and crumbling. Articulate and overwhelmed. Sometimes admired, often alienated. So I delayed exploring it. I convinced myself that it was just anxiety, or I was tired, or intense, and I blamed myself instead of trying to fix myself. But autism was never the problem. It was the story I'd been told about what it meant to be autistic. So let's talk about that shame. the silent companion to so many late diagnosed autistic people. Shame shows up in tiny moments. The look someone gives you when you say the wrong thing. The awkward silence after your reaction didn't match the room. The moment you notice people adjusting around you. Slightly, politely, like you're made of something delicate or you're difficult. You don't need to be told explicitly that you're wrong. You learn it in the glances, the sighs, the subtle shift. You learn to shrink, to adapt, to mimic. And in doing so, you lose access to the raw truth of who you are. By the time you consider autism as a possibility, that shame has fossilized. You've built your life around managing other people's comfort. And the idea that your difference was valid, even valuable, feels almost dangerous to believe. The truth is, difference doesn't make you defective. Your needs don't make you demanding, and your sensitivities don't make you fragile. Your wiring isn't wrong, it's just yours. Diagnosis isn't about getting permission to be who you are, it's about reclaiming the right to stop apologizing for it. You can know you're autistic without a piece of paper. You can be undiagnosed and still valid. You can explore traits and discover yourself in stories, communities, symptoms, or sensations. And you can also not know for sure. And that's okay too. For me, the diagnosis was less about the label and more about the clarity. It helped me rebuild the story of my life through a new lens. One that explained not only what had happened to me, but how I've responded. It explains why I've always needed structure, why I've always felt more connection with animals and music than with people, why I can be so articulate about abstract ideas, but freeze when asked how I'm feeling, why I seem fine under pressure, but fall apart when the shift ends, why I get stuck on sounds, textures, memories, not because I'm obsessive, but because my brain holds on to what others can let go. The knowledge didn't fix everything, but it helped me stop fighting myself. It gave me space to ask better questions. How do I work with my brain instead of against it? What brings me peace, not just productivity? Where can I unmask safely, not to perform, but to be seen? More importantly, who can I unmask safely around? But more than anything, it helped me build a sense of identity not based on what I lack, but on what I carry. Depth, honesty, precision, passion, pattern recognition, emotional intensity, fierce loyalty, and deep caring for those who I value. Autism didn't make me broken, but misunderstanding it did. And now I'm unlearning that narrative piece by piece. Let's also take a moment to reclaim the word spectrum. It doesn't mean a line, it's not linear, it's not mild to severe, it's not a little bit autistic versus very autistic. The spectrum is a multi-dimensional experience, more like a colour wheel than a ladder. You can be highly verbal and still struggle with sensory overload. You can be independent and still experience shutdowns. You can be successful by external standards and still be deeply misunderstood. No two autistic people are the same, but we do share common threads. The world often expects us to adapt endlessly, without being given the understanding, language, or tools to do so safely. And that's what this conversation is for. So, where do we go from here? How do we, as autistic people, or people in the process of realizing we might be, begin to live more fully, more truthfully, and more safely in a world that often misunderstands us? Well, we start by giving up the performance. We stop apologizing for our traits. We stop explaining ourselves to people who only want the digestible version. We stop pretending that our brilliance makes us invulnerable. We start taking up space, even if that makes other people uncomfortable. And we begin to say, this is what I need, without caveats. We begin to say, that hurts me, without shrinking. And we begin to say, I don't have to prove that I'm struggling, I already am. Because so many of us grew up in environments where masking was survival, we became what others needed us to be. The fixer, the achiever, the quiet one, the polite one, the one who never asked for much. The class clown, the entertainer. But at some point, the mask becomes suffocating. It becomes a barrier, not just to others, but to ourselves. You can't connect with people deeply when you're dissociating to keep them comfortable. You can't build real relationships when you're constantly second-guessing your tone, your timing, your needs, your worth. And you can't thrive when you're spending all of your energy trying to seem fine. So if you're listening to this and you've never said the word autistic out loud, I see you. And if you're listening to this and you've spent your whole life convinced you're too much, or too sensitive, or too intense, I believe you. If you sat alone in a bathroom trying to calm your breathing before a social event, if you've rehearsed conversations in your head on a loop before picking up the phone, and if you've ever told yourself, don't cry, don't stim, don't say that, more times than you can count, then you're not broken, you're not alone, and you're not a burden. You are autistic. And that word is not a diagnosis to hide, it's a lens to see yourself more clearly, maybe for the first time. And to the people who live and work and love alongside autistic people, this is for you too. We don't need you to fix us. We need you to believe us. When we say that we're overwhelmed, don't ask us why. When we stim, don't stare. When we go quiet, don't assume we're being rude. When we speak passionately, don't label us as intense. When we advocate for our needs, don't treat us as difficult. Respect our no's, celebrate our yes, and when in doubt, just ask, don't assume. And please, if you see an autistic person succeeding, don't use that as evidence that others are making excuses. What you see is the output, what you don't see is the cost. Don't praise the mask, support the person underneath it. Here's what I would say to myself, the younger version, the undiagnosed version, and the version who tried to shapeshift into normality because he didn't really know there was any other options. You were never too much, despite what people told you. You were just surrounded by people who either didn't know how to hold that or wanted to manipulate it. Your empathy is real, even when you don't show it conventionally. Your logic is valid, even when it makes others uncomfortable. And your way of loving is profound, even if it looks different than what is expected. You don't need to earn your rest, you don't need to apologize for your wiring, and you don't need to perform softness to be safe. You can stim in public, you can walk away from noise, you can cry when no one else does. You can feel things so deeply that it hurts and still be okay. Because you don't have to be understood by everyone. You do have to be real, and being real is enough. So this has been Navigating Life with Neurodiversity. I'm Matt, someone who's still learning, still unmasking, and still unfolding. Thank you for listening, not just to the facts, but to the feelings. Not just to the science, but to the soul of it. Because autism isn't something that lives in textbooks, it lives in people. And those people deserve to be seen as whole. Autism isn't a puzzle. It's not a problem to be solved. It's not a limitation or a headline. It is a lived reality. It is a way of existing in a world that is rich, vivid, intense, and yes, sometimes overwhelming. But it is worthy, always. If this episode resonated with you, if you found a piece of yourself in the words, I'd be honored if you shared it with someone else who needs to know that they are not alone. Autistic people exist in every community. We're not rare. We are not broken. We are not waiting to be fixed. We're already here, asking to be heard, honored, asking to be allowed to exist without condition. So, to the autistic child who's still being told they're too much, to the autistic adult hiding in plain sight at work, to the undiagnosed person who's just starting to put the puzzle together, to the burnt out, overstimulated, hyper-empathetic, chronically misunderstood version of me, and maybe you, I say this, you are real, you are worthy, you are loved. Until next time, stay kind, stay curious, and stay real. Thanks for listening to Navigating Life with Neurodiversity. If this episode resonated, follow on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. Share it with someone you care about or leave a review. It all helps more than you know. Until next time, be kind to yourselves.